Coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm. Well, hello, everybody. How are you doing this evening? Chris Jordan here, coming at you live from Austin, Texas. Hope everybody has had a great week so far. Happy World UFO Day, everybody. You gotta love the fact that there is a day around the world actively dedicated to UFOs, UAPs. And you say what you want, everybody. I am a fan of the term UAP. I think it has actively brought science into the world of this investigation unashamedly and unabashedly now. So that's where I stand on it. Our guests tonight, in the first segment, we will be talking with Dr. Simeon Hine. He is the author of such books as Dark Matter Monsters, Cryptids, Ball Lightning, and the Science of Secret Life Forms. He is also the founder of the Institute for Resonance. He also has the website Black Swan Ghosts, as well as the book Black Swan Ghosts. We'll talk about some Black Swan event concepts tonight. Specifically tonight, we will be talking about Dr. Simeon's work into the world of crop circles. So welcome to the show, Dr. Simeon Hine. Are you there on the line?
Hi, Chris. How's it going?
There he is. Hey, doing fantastic. How are you?
Good. Thanks for the introduction. Thanks for having me here.
Absolutely. Let's get in real quick. How did you first come to the world of studying things like crop circles? Because that is a very drilled in and specified area of study.
Chris, I'm getting, do I have your show on here? Is that what's going on? I am just getting a lot of, sorry, it's my fault. Getting you on the YouTube live.
No worries.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. How did I get into the area of crop circles? Is that the question?
Yes, sir.
It's a very good question. It came through a remote viewing, which I'm sure your audience is familiar with. I took a class back in the 90s at the Farsight Institute, and one of the targets that we got towards the end of the week, it was an eight-day class, you know, this ability we have to perceive non-local information with a good degree of accuracy, sometimes very good accuracy. Yeah, so I just got curious. I had never, it was just a couple of years out of grad school. I had been an assistant professor teaching statistics. I didn't know what a crop circle was. Remote viewing at the time for me was a stretch enough. And to see one of these pictures, I got curious. You want your feedback when you do remote viewing.
Yeah.
And I wanted to get some feedback. What was this? This was the triple Julia set from Windmill Hill. That's what the target was. So, you do the session blind, then you see the picture at the end. I was curious what these were, Chris. So I went with a guy named Ron Russell from the Denver area on a crop circle tour. I had met him at a UFO conference in the Denver area. I mean, I got curious about UFOs too after taking remote viewing. And he said, I give these tours. We can walk around in them, go over to the UK, see what happens. So I thought this would be a good way to get feedback on my session, which had a lot of strange aspects to it in terms of the energy, the feeling of the target. It was different than you would get from like the Eiffel Tower or Washington Monument. It was a different type of energy. Sure. That's what you get in remote viewing. So I went with Ron and I immediately encountered people that told me they were getting weird phenomena in and around these crop circles. We didn't have any idea how they were made back then. But, you know, talking to people from who were there once we got there, there were really odd things happening. People's cameras and batteries, not to mention seeing orbs.
Yep.
Ball lightning things around crop circles and even occasional UFO. So I could see for myself that the people, even though I was new to the subject, the people around the phenomena were very enthusiastic about it. So yes, I wrote that book. I went there, researched it, and it became Opening Minds, which is about resonance in crop circles and remote viewing. The thing that really, I guess, sucked me into the topic was seeing our own cameras and batteries fail in and around crop circles. Even a case at the Danbury Triad formation near Andover, the first couple weeks I was there, I mean, first week or so, was seeing Ron's camcorder have a malfunction that led it to melt on the inside.
Oh, wow.
By the power supply. While it was not filming, just sitting in the crop, it melted. And I thought, there's got to be something going on here with these patterns and energy. So that's how I got involved with it, is seeing evidence for myself that there was something about the space around crop circles that affected electronics and created orbs. And space-time distortions, you know, just sort of odd phenomena that we see around paranormal places, for lack of a better word. Yeah. And that's how I got involved.
Wow. And it's remarkable that you got involved with that through remote viewing, that is where that study led you. And yes, my audience is very familiar with the fact of the concept of a remote viewing. We've had Lynn Buchanan on a few times. I normally go and cover the remote viewing conference every year. I myself take remote viewing classes Lynn Buchanan. And it's pretty remarkable. And I know last time we had you on, we talked a little bit about the idea of quantum entanglement and how that really lays a great foundation for actual quantifiable proof, other than statistical proof that's out there in hit and miss catalogs, things like that. And with databases, a lot of people don't understand that there are, with traditional remote viewing, numerous protocols involved. Including having a monitor, like you were saying, getting your feedback on a session is very important from a monitor, things
right,
like that.
That's right. It's very important to get your feedback. And there are other quantum principles beyond entanglement that come into play here. One of them is called the Ronhoff-Bohm effect, where you can have zero electromagnetic field radiating from an object or an area, but you're still going to get communication at a distance, kind of like what remote viewing is.
Interesting.
And this was discovered in the 50s and verified in 86 in Japan. And it's basically the way a particle can become correlated with another group of particles with zero electromagnetic interaction, only through this phantom property of what's called vector potential. It's just pure numbers that make quantum mechanics work. And if those numbers say that there's interaction going on, you will get this communication going on. And it turns out that Harold Puthoff, who ran the RB program at SRI,
yep,
for the government with Russ Targ, when he left the program, when he left the RV program and turned it over to Ed May, I believe in the late 80s, he went on to get patents in the Ronhoff-Bohm effect for communication, which I think indicates to us that there's something for someone who spent more than a decade studying remote viewing to come out of it and go straight into an application of the Iran-Hobom effect, I think shows us something that's going on there. But so it's not literally entanglement, in my view. It's not the particles, because entangled particles, in theory, don't exchange information. Mm. It's sort of like a statistical correlation, but the Iran-Hobom effect does. So I'm leaning more towards the AB effect. And the types of things associated with the AB effect, there are things called fractal magnetic toroidal moments, other types of electromagnetic configurations that are not typical, that are not direct, but lead to non-local distant interaction.
Interesting. Now, especially whenever you're talking toroidal fields, things like that, that's specifically some of the things that have been hypothesized for years as possible sources of crop circles.
Well, there's a lot of overlap here, Chris. I mean, I think we need to accept at the end of the day, all the phenomena that a lot of us have been interested in over the years, you cannot escape the commonalities between the types of symptoms you see around these phenomena that we call paranormal or psychic or psi related.
Yeah.
And the donut shaped magnetic moments, in contrast to these ordinary 90 degree electrical magnetic configurations that Maxwell explored and showed us in Maxwell's equations, which are just standard, ordinary electromagnetic interactions. When you begin to push those relationships between electricity and magnetism beyond a certain angle, you end up with other forms of electromagnetic phenomena, some of which don't radiate anymore in any conventional way, but still create long distance interactions and create something called magnetic monopoles and exotic materials that even create magnetization of non-magnetic materials. You're in a whole different realm.
Yeah.
They don't call it paranormal in physics, but that's what we ended up calling it for those of us who've experienced it or who study these topics.
Yeah.
But I don't think you can escape the conclusion that this is all the same thing. We're talking about another type of electromagnetic space that's in the same space you and I are in right now. Mm. And it's working differently than our computer and electrical technology, which is based on Maxwell's equations and 90-degree angles and all that ordinary stuff. It's predictable and it works. And we're able to communicate right now like we are and communicate out to our audience and so forth. This is a whole another range of phenomena with inverse properties like negative temperatures and the ability to cool an environment when they rev up, the opposite of our electronics, which tends to heat things, right?
Yeah.
It's all the exact opposite. And to have this non-local distant interaction.
Yeah.
Well, even the ability to cloak, to become invisible, to form orbs and ball lightning.
Yeah.
Micro ball lightning. This is what you see across all these phenomena, whether it's crop circles, Bigfoot, or UFOs. And I think it's our modern professional egos that just want these topics to be separate, because the conferences are, you know, they're about Bigfoot or they're about, I've been to all the UFOs, crop circles. But why do you get the same phenomena happening in all of these phenomena, unless there's some fundamental underlying reasons, which I think are these exotic quantum principles that have not been explored very much. And, you know, you listen to people talk about being around where a Bigfoot was, and they say that it was their hair stood on end, like it was static charge.
Yep.
Just in the area where the Bigfoot had been standing. And then they feel a little nauseous or a weird, and they're trying to understand why. It's because the physical space had its properties changed by being around such a life form, in the same way that the crop circle, regardless of who made it, whether you and I went out and made it, in my view, or a UFO left it with propulsion system, something about that shape is Bill Tiller, who spoke at the Urban conferences a number of times, called it a conditioned space.
Yep.
It has a different resonance than ordinary space.
Yeah.
And it operates kind of in an inverse way, but we can see these symptoms over and over again. Then you get the orbs. Then you notice your batteries are draining. It's always the same thing every time. You even read UFO reports from NICAP from the 60s and 70s, strange effects around UFO. Same thing people said. Their radio went on the fritz. Car engine stopped working.
Yeah.
I interviewed a lot of Bigfoot witnesses. They said their car stalled right around the Bigfoot. I mean, I don't think it's a separate phenomenon. There's too many similar things going on. What we're dealing with is another type of space. Call it a parallel reality, but it overlaps with ours. We call it paranormal because we can't totally go where it is. We just see some of the overlap. That's my view of it, Chris.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, quite literally, this is a regular topic of conversation on the show, Simeon, is the idea that vibration specifically the range in which our eyes can see, that very locked in range, there's a whole world slightly adjacent to us that is gamma waves, all kinds of things, like, you know, you have to have almost imperceptible detectors to detect them. However, much like an analog watch is changed whenever you get it near a magnet, somehow or another, people are changed. And I've held for a long time, and whenever I've spoken at conferences, I hold the fact that people, specifically people who have been in close contact with UFO, UAP, people who have been taken aboard craft, you are in something that is able to warp space and time and vibrate between vibrational fields. Like, I've played with some Tesla power and stuff in my home studio. My wife made me stop when my radio clock started looking like the Predator language. But I got to a point where copper was magnetic. And that's some pretty high order RF field. You know, like when you're talking about people like Hutchison, who was able to make metals basically become liquid. Things like that, achieve levitation of pretty heavy objects in his home garage, you know, and this was decades ago.
Yes.
So there, but like you said, that changes that atmosphere. It's no different than turning on a Tesla coil for 10 minutes and then walking in the room. It smells like ozone. It changes the atmosphere around it. The whole field does.
Right. That's right. I was just at a conference a couple weekends ago called the Cosmic Summit in Greensboro, North Carolina, organized by Randall Carson, the kind of historian, archaeologist, looks at ancient societies, what sort of technology they had. And Bob Greener from the Martin Fleischman Memorial Project was presenting there, and he brought along these Tesla metal samples so I could actually hold them. Everyone could pass them around and look at them. You know, these twisted metal samples that look like they've been liquefied, but it was done at room temperature, just with electricity.
Yeah,
and not enough electricity to like totally destroy something. It's just going in and creating some sort of coherency in the atomic structure, where there is this sort of the ordinary bonds that create and maintain the elements, chemical elements we know about. They change into something else very briefly, and in that moment they completely release their ordinary electron configurations and melt at room temperature. This is sort of one of the phenomena we see happening in these contexts, is materials liquefying at room temperature. And that is very powerful.
Nope. Sorry, you're breaking up.
Because you haven't seen Hutchinson samples. I've been in there. Weapons has happened. We think of melting temperature.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Let me just.
That's okay. Yeah. If you want to keep that mute right there, on. Oops. Oh, no. Are you calling me? You still there, doctor?
Yeah, yeah, I'm here. I just muted the
yes,
camera.
Absolutely. Yeah, that'll maintain the best audio for us, most definitely. And yeah, like you were saying,
go ahead. Yeah, I have seen materials melt in front of my eyes at a demonstration in Japan. This fellow that could do this near Nagasaki when I was teaching remote viewing in Japan, one of my students who was a brain surgeon took me to see this guy who could do PK. What we're talking about, Chris, is something called PK.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And it's the ability to influence materials that you would normally think would require huge amounts of energy, but certain humans that have this training, Nina Kalikina in Soviet Union was able to do this, and there are videos of her on YouTube doing this in front of lots of scientists. Back in Soviet Union was around. They're able to project this coherent energy that literally takes matter apart. It strips it apart and then lets it reassemble. I saw this with my eyes in Japan. This guy could twist Coke bottles into spirals in front of your eyes. Ordinary glass Coke bottle. Like they would temporarily become a liquid. And it wasn't hot when he was done. We could touch it. It wasn't heated. It wasn't doing it through heat. It was doing it through some sort of coherent energy transfer that changes the structure of the atoms so that they're not bound into their charge configurations like they normally are. And I think that's part of the secret here, Chris, is what holds everything together as we know it are charges. And if you neutralize those charges, even for a millisecond, the atoms don't know where they are anymore. They're not oriented the way they were across these huge metal lattices at a subatomic level. And they instantly change. And I think this is why we don't know very much about this. It has a lot of military applications. You're talking about melting materials with very low amounts of energy.
Yeah.
And I can't, you know, that has national security implications, which I, by my opinion, I don't prove. I think this is why we haven't heard very much about this, because everyone who's gone in this direction has had their programs, their experiments sucked into black budget operations because it has a lot of implications. But it's a real.
Yeah, I mean, it.
Metal, also, he bent spoons. He could levitate objects just like Hutchinson. He could levitate it over his palm. He didn't need any electrical source. His body was the source. This is what we're talking about in terms of the fundamentals of what we call paranormal phenomena.
Yeah, yeah, precisely. I mean, even right now, you know, the great Hal Putoff is right down the road here in Austin, Texas, in his lab working on pulling energy from vacuums, you know, doing all kinds of wild science like that. And it's interesting to see where these things lead. What did you learn through your study of crop circles? What did you learn as far as frequency and resonance and their connection to the world around us, doctor?
Well, what it seemed like to me, Chris, is that if you had the proper shape of a crop circle, and not just ones made by plasmas or ball lightning or UFOs, those are some of the sources in the past of crop circles, but even human-made ones. If you got the mathematical ratios correct, the spiral shape of the way the wheat is sort of spiraling around the center of the crop circle.
Sure.
It seemed that if you got it very precisely constructed, it would be electronically active for a period of time, maybe a couple of days. And that it would literally affect cameras and watches and batteries and even create occasional space-time distortions. People going in these circles feeling like they all of a sudden were thrust back into the past, another time period, encountering people speaking a different type of English
and
from the past, wearing different clothing.
And this is in both, anomalous crop circle as well as known made crop circles, like crop circles that we knew were made by human hands.
Right, right.
Interesting.
And yeah, and we made a bunch of our own ones. See, sure. We initially didn't think people could make these really big ones. And there were people that came to the conferences that were circle makers that were just curious about the state of knowledge of crop circles. And they saw Ron and myself, and they thought we were approachable. And they offered to show us how they made theirs, first in the daytime and then at night. The ones in the daytime were for like advertisements and things, but the ones at night, they would just pick a field that they felt had good feng shui or something and go place, very carefully place a pattern. And they convinced me that humans with practice could make really good big ones.
Yeah.
But the surprising thing was that they had electrical activity that we could measure with our static meter. And that would affect our equipment and so forth.
No.
And so I didn't believe this, but they showed me that human-made ones could be electrically active.
That is very interesting, because one of the things I bring up regularly is, especially when it comes to paranormal investigation, things like that, and preparing for paranormal investigation, is when you're preparing your equipment that you should try to be as blank slate as possible. You know, don't think about the location you're going to, rumors you've heard about it, stories you've heard about it. Don't watch any documentaries about it, you know, things like that, because you may actively be charging the environment itself with your intent.
Right. Right.
And
that's a good point.
You know, like this, very much the same way, like these guys put so much effort and passion into the creation of what is basically a sacred geometry. And like you said, if they get the angles of that sacred geometry right with their intent, it basically rings the bell.
Right. They're definitely creating an interaction with those shapes. Yeah. In physics, material science, it's called helicity, which means that there's a directionality, the way the wheat stalks are spiraling left or right.
Yeah.
And there's a top concept called anisotropy, which again is that everything is facing the same direction. I mean, it gives liquid crystals their ability to create all the cool things that liquid crystals do, like our computer screens and so
forth. Yeah.
And that's because they're all lined up one way or another, and they reveal colors behind on the screen or however the particular screen you have works. It has to do with these crystals all changing directions like little soldiers in precise ways at the exact right time to create these sort of fixed images or moving images on our screen with the right colors and the right contrast and so forth. And it seemed to me that what you had in the fields were like liquid crystals made of wheat, because you had that precise directionality and the precise ratio. And some of the ones that seemed more active to me seemed like fractal shapes, self-similar fractal shapes, circles within circles.
Sure.
More circular formations than square ones had that activity to them. And the biggest surprise to me was when I started looking into cryptids and Bigfoot to see that people were experiencing the same phenomena around Bigfoot and cryptids with their cameras and watches and devices that we had seen around the crop circle. I mean, what could be a bigger stretch than saying there's a Bigfoot crop circle connection? But there is. There is.
What's interesting is that there have been numerous cases over the last probably 5 years to decade, Doctor, where these worlds of paranormal investigation are beginning to cross paths, where the fields of evidence out there, I won't say proof, but I will say evidence. I will say that it's, laboratory evidence, things that we can bring forward, that there is a growing body of that there to show that there is connection between these phenomena.
There is. And the reason we don't know more about this is because there's tremendous stigma around these topics when people experience it for themselves.
Yeah.
And it's easy to not talk about it or forget about it if it just doesn't fit in the mainstream social consensus view of reality that we're taught. So on one hand, people are afraid, and I'm speaking of, you know, as a sociologist here, they're afraid of the ostracism and the ridicule and the hostility of being a UFO or Bigfoot experiencer. And it's just easier to forget about it or never talk about it again than to say, hey, I saw something that's really strange and doesn't fit. And then you got to throw in decades of government disinformation campaigns.
Yeah.
Creating their own ridicule and stigma around the topics for whatever reasons the government wanted to do that.
Yeah.
And you sort of have this double whammy on either side for witnesses. But the evidence that this is true, you just have to look like someone like Stan Gordon, the researcher from Pennsylvania. You know, I've talked to him a couple of times. I've read his book, Silent Invasion, Creepy Cryptids, and the Silent Invasion is about the Bigfoot UFO connection.
Yep.
He didn't, he wasn't looking for Bigfoot. He was a UFO. And he answered the phone for the Westinghouse informal UFO club that met after work at Stan Friedman was a part of in Pittsburgh.
Oh, wow.
And he was the phone boy. He answered the phone starting in 1959. He's been researching this longer than any of us have been alive. 59. And he said he was looking for UFO reports, and people started reporting Bigfoot in the same areas where the UFOs were seen, starting in 1965, 2 years before the Patterson-Gimlin film. The famous Elmo Patty walking across at Bluff Creek. And so this is someone that's just a really good example of how these phenomena cross, who wasn't looking for it, right?
Yeah.
Why would you get Sasquatch and Bigfoot in the same field as a UFO? Around the same times or in the same general vicinities, and other creepy cryptids. Some of them are kind of creepy. Just saying that kind of lightly, but we don't understand what they are, except that they're living bipedal creatures. It's hard to say what they are. You know, you wouldn't get them happening around UFOs unless, again, there's some fundamental underlying principles that involve both of these phenomena. In other words, it suggests to me, Chris, that UFOs are not just spaceships from other planets with little guys in them coming here to do some test the plants or do some experiments or something, or abduct people or whatever they're doing. There's something more to it going on. It's almost like a veil is being lifted and we're seeing another stage with its own cast of characters. And those characters come in groups. They're not inseparable. They're not separable. They come together because they're part of the same frequency, like you used that word. They're part of that same general canvas. They could appear to be extraterrestrial. Maybe some of them are. But, you know, you have to really come up with a good reason why you would get. Often people have UFO experiences and then they get strange experiences around their homes.
Yep.
For a while. Yeah, and it's not just that there's a hitchhiker thing following them back from the UFO field, or there's something more to it than that.
Well, and that's where, like I was saying earlier, that concept of the watch and the magnet, that person themselves is now vibrating at a different frequency, you know, which to me explains at least somewhat, you know, phenomenologically, how these experiencers of these events end up having other experiences, you know, end up becoming sometimes a magnet for experience.
Right.
And some people even come back, you know, as fully changed people. Some people come back with wounds being healed.
Right.
Illnesses being healed. Yes, some of them come back able to help other people. It's pretty interesting.
It's pretty interesting. And you're just mentioning a whole topic in and of itself that's fascinating, is the spontaneous healings around UFOs and Sasquatch and other phenomena.
And people who
felt they were healed. Crop circles. There were cases of people feeling that they were healed.
Yeah.
And cases of people having their cars repaired overnight in areas where Sasquatch were seen on the front lawn, and they had some bad accident, and the next morning it's completely fixed up. I You know, not 100%, but pretty good. Like how it makes you think of these people that can do PK, like maybe these Sasquatch have some PK ability that they use rarely. And if they really like a certain person, they'll see something's off and they'll fix it. You know, they'll just do their best to fix it with their energy systems, their natural biological system. I mean, this is what the evidence suggests. I know it seems hard to believe, but this is what people say they experience. I had a friend, Julie from Alabama, that had one of these experiences. She had had a Sasquatch sighting as a 10-year-old in Indiana, Marion, Indiana. And she saw one of these Sasquatch at the end of the street picking berries. It was white haired. And then she had a UFO experience over the Marion, supermarket, saw something hovering there. A number of people did. And years later, she was in need of a pipe wrench in Alabama, and she's deep in the woods, far away from everything. And there's flooding going on, you know, inside her house. She goes outside just to compose herself, to take a couple breaths. And there's the perfect pipe wrench sitting in the driveway, the exact thing she would need at the exact moment. It sounds like a fairy tale, but wow. It happened. And it's happened to many people around the Sasquatch phenomena. It's like they're either listening in or they have another, like the way remote viewers can go in and remote view a distant location and see it from a bird's eye view and get a feeling what's going on there. It's like the Sasquatch can do that with certain people, for better or for worse, through resonance, you know?
Yeah.
And they're able to take action that is beneficial to you. Not to mention healings. There are cases of them healing people too, just like that. I know these aren't really common. They're kind of rare events, but they happen. And it demands that we come up with some bigger scientific paradigm than the one we've been dealing with, which isn't really doing a particularly great job anyway. I think it's time we moved on to a larger scientific paradigm. I suggested recently on Twitter X that every university should have a department of paranormal sciences.
Absolutely.
Why not? You have all these, you know, you got the data, you got the cases. It repeats over and over again. Rare, but it's the same thing over and over again, decade in, decade out. What are the commonalities here? What does this tell us about physics?
Yeah.
I think it has something to do with what we call coherent matter, which is like lasers and Bose-Einstein condensates and masers. Before lasers, that were microwave amplitude stimulated emission. It was a similar thing with microwaves you get with lasers. But we all know what lasers look like. They have that incredible intensity. But if you're looking from the side, unless there's a lot of dust, you don't see them.
Yeah.
These phenomena seem to be laser focused like that, which suggests that there's some coherency going on between the atoms, between the matter itself is correlated. And it's able to do what seems like magic. It really seems like magic, but it happens, and it happens around UFO sightings. And it can go the other way too. It can create really strange effects. But as you pointed out, it changes people's lives. And sometimes they come after experiencing orbs or these phenomena like orbs, ball lightning, they become a different person. The Day family, I mentioned this in Dark Matter Monsters, and Andrew Collins wrote about this in his book, The New Circle Makers. The Day family encountering this blue mist on the road outside of the London suburbs area. And they had missing time. They saw these orbs. They encountered beings. And then they all changed over the next couple of weeks. They became interested in the environment. They quit smoking. They became different people. So,
yeah.
It's fascinating.
And you know, it's even more fascinating whenever you start getting into the messages that experiencers get, the overwhelming feelings that they get that are very similar between experiences, the messages that abductees receive seem to be very familiar. The messages from NDE, near-death experiencers. It's pretty remarkable when you start. And this is what I've said about AI the whole time, is that fields like this, fields of data like this, like being able to take all of the Bigfoot research organization sightings and feed them into an AI, we would be able to cull data so fast, so fast.
That's a good point. Good point.
Yeah, because I know for a lot of people in my audience out there, AI seems very scary, but there's some great stuff out there. Like, I don't know if you're familiar with SciSummary, Doctor, but it's one that I absolutely love, where it's made specifically for researchers. The only data pool it draws from is the data pool that you give it. So you quite literally take research papers of the topic that you're looking at. You feed it into it, and then you ask it to give you a summary of 1,000 words, 1,500 words with 8 bullet points. You know, so it basically summarizes scientific research for you.
I like it.
Oh, it's incredible. It's great. It's fantastic. And when you're talking about things
that's
like...
Yeah, it's good because it doesn't have the bias.
Exactly. It's not pulling trash off of Google that may or may not be fact-checked.
Right. I mean, you're just reminding me of when I used to have advertising campaigns on Facebook and Google, and they both eventually wrote me and said, this isn't real. We're canceling your account.
Yeah.
We're canceling your business account, not personal, but
yeah.
You can no longer advertise with us, period, because we don't believe in remote viewing. It's like, I wrote back to Facebook, I will come out and give you a lecture on the history of remote viewing, the special access program, and all the success that
the government
RV program had. Never, no response. So it's like a type of dogmatism, corporate dogmatism. And well, it'll change eventually, but that would be very helpful, because there's this bias against these subjects because
there are,
well, whatever reason it is, it's pretty bad and it's limited us. It's inhibited our evolution as a society.
Well, and I think
we can see where it's leading. We can see where it's leading if we don't change.
It definitely, as you were saying a minute ago, I am in full agreement with you that we need a new paradigm in science. We need a new way specifically for good citizen scientists to be able to shake the hands of science with their data. I mean, quite literally, I just released the field observation and encounter log. It's like a 100-page little book that you can carry in your pocket, because unfortunately, all too often, if somebody does have a picture, they didn't sit down and write down that experience when it happened. You know, so and that's just it. Like, we can bring a scientist in a lab a picture all day long, but what they need is the 1,000 words with the picture. They need where it was taken, a geolocation, what direction it was taken in, what the temperature was outside.
No, it is exactly.
You know, and
we need to record all this.
Yeah,
we need to record all
even
this.
Even
and
in
we're
the,
not. It's,
even in the paranormal field, whenever people are out doing paranormal investigations, are you writing all of this data down when you take a picture or when you gather an EVP recording? Because it's all very important. You know, like, even as an audio engineer, I can tell you right now, sound carries different and does different things in a 70% humid environment.
Mm-hmm.
That's just physics. Like, I'd love to tell you that things don't sound muddy, but they do. Totally different than a crisp, clean mountain evening.
If I was President Biden right now, I would go for the Hail Mary pass, and I would level with the American people about what's been going on with all these subjects, right?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And if he wants to be president again, he needs to do more to tell us about these phenomena. All of these phenomena that you and I are talking about here are associated with special access programs.
Yes.
And it's not being shared with the American people who are paying for it.
Yeah.
And the person who told me that, you know, was Hal Putta at the IRBA conference, SSE, told it to the whole audience. He told me that personally at breakfast when I asked him to come on my show.
He was like, I'd love to be on your show. And unfortunately, I'm read on to way too many things. And I was like,
"That's exactly what he told me, and I fully appreciate that." He said it's all stovepipes, and he told me that it's a threat to American science because nobody in these stovepipe programs They can't talk to the guy at the other desk on the other side of the room. Yep. They're not even allowed to look at the desk of the other guy or gal in the room. And they reach these problems and they can't talk to anyone about it. And it turns into a dead end. And it doesn't turn into a dead end in China or Russia, where they have a lot of open programs and this, and they talk about it. And there is a danger that our entire society is going to fall behind.
Yeah.
Because of this overclassification of these topics. I get the reasons to protect national security. My dad was a D-Day. He went to Omaha Beach. I know the reasons to have secrecy. You got to have surprise sometimes. At the same time, you can't classify everything.
Yeah.
You're just creating a totally dumbed down proletarian society.
Yeah, no, and that is an absolute truth. And when you look at the fact of, and believe me, folks, you can say what you want about, you know, secretive Skinwalker Ranch, things like that. The Bigelow Institute definitely got some commas and zeros for a good decade doing their work out there into that. Yeah. And that's still under wraps. And that's part of the reason why they're having the issues they're having, is because they can't even get access to the research that was done on their own property.
No.
So,
can't get access to the research that was done. And I asked them about this when we had a tour of Bigelow Aerospace at the IRBA SSE meeting in Vegas in 2018. There was a tour of Bigelow Aerospace set up by John Alexander. And it was a lot of fun going in there. But I finally asked them, the people, our tour leader, what about the New York Times article that says that you have materials in a room here that is completely airtight, atmosphere has been pulled out of it so that if the life forms emerged, they wouldn't pose a threat? And do you have such a facility? And they just laughed at it and made jokes and, you know, comment on these things. But it was in a New York Times article about it again, James Lukatsky, Skinwalker to the Pentagon, that they NHI materials, and they were getting these grants for this from the federal government, and they can't talk about it. They still can't talk about it. So, you know, what are we doing to ourselves with all this excessive secrecy? You know?
Yeah, no, precisely, because what ends up happening is good people like Hal Puthoff, who once again, that seminal work years ago led to remote viewing, led to ideas of quantum entanglement, all kinds of stuff. You end up with people like him who, get into this collimated system where once they're read in, even though that topic may branch onto something else, they immediately read them onto that so that they can't talk about that either. And it's interesting to see it because sometimes it's quite literally projects that they aren't even working on or don't even have interest in, but they'll still read them in on the topic so that they can't go out and talk about the technologies that are adjunct between what they're working on and the other possible uses.
No, it's true. And I've run into several of these types of engineers who worked on these programs, and they told me point blank it wasn't Earth materials, it was from somewhere else, it was too advanced, it wasn't made of materials, isotopic ratios and all that you find on Earth. And then they'd say, you know, I can't ever talk about this again, I already told you too much, just forget we had the conversation.
Yeah.
And they get up and walk away, and you know, you just talk to someone that examined
now
technology from another part of the galaxy.
Yeah.
Which just that alone, I mean, it's mind-boggling for society just to have these conversations, to have radio podcast conversations like we're having now every day, all over the place. So everyone could, it would totally energize our economy in the biggest possible way, the way Star Trek energized our imaginations as young kids. You know, I mean, we're talking about reality here. Is other civilizations, things that are physical, things that are non-physical, and some of them are here, some of them visit us. It's very complex. But that's what we need right now. And I just feel like no one is doing their job in the government, at least on this, what I can see, to break it open. Some people have, and they suffered some kind of head crush to do it a couple of months ago. I mean, there's a lot of blowback. Well, I mean, what are we, the Soviet Union? Have we become the new Soviet Union, repressing everything, dissidents and free speech?
Yeah, no, precisely. And we've, you know, it's kind of scary sometimes, Doc, the way that things are just pushed aside, the way that hypothesis is pushed aside, the way that the box, even though they don't want it to be in a Kleenex box called UFO, yeah. They'd much rather it be UAP. Still, if it doesn't fit in their box, they don't want to play with it, you know. So once again, yeah, I think,
you know,
go ahead,
Chris. I can't tell you how many people I've talked to who told me that their dads, who had worked at Area 51, one of the facilities out there, Mercury, at some point in their life started talking about what they really did out there at Mercury or in Area 51, right?
Yeah.
And then the kids asked them the next day, what were you talking about? And they said, don't ask me about it again. I can't talk about it. Our family could be hurt. And then they were slightly drunk or something. They said something around the campfire about encountering extraterrestrials out there, extraterrestrial technology. I mean, I keep hearing this year in, year out from people whose dads worked out there. I do think they're all making it up. I don't think so. I think there's really things going on. And these people, as they get older, before they pass on, before they die, they maybe want to get it off their chest. That's what I wrote about in Blocks Long Ago. So I encountered some of these witnesses, including a woman whose dad flew wreckage to Roswell. And he didn't want to talk about it till about 2 weeks before he died in the hospital. He called each daughter into the hospital room and told her what those materials really were and how incredibly significant that event was, but they couldn't really talk about it openly because they're afraid their retribution against the family.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's what sort of led me to, by the way, there's a new Black Swan Ghost. I just released a second edition on Amazon. Yeah. You can see
Fantastic.
Little seal there. It shows it's the second edition.
Awesome.
So I'm not even looking for these people, Chris. I just do my thing as a remote viewing teacher and someone who's given crop circle tours. They keep running into these UFO ET witnesses whose parents worked in the military or even a long time ago worked at the Roswell Army Airfield, you know, people like this. Why do these stories keep coming up again and again? I'm not even out there trying to find people like this. They run into me and they want to share their stories because they want to get it off their chest. This is a national issue of integrity. And being ethical about telling the truth about who we are and what we've experienced. We can't grow unless we have that integrity.
Well, and that's just it. And much as I say at the end of every episode of this, it takes open hearts and open minds to have a conversation. And without that, we don't move forward as humanity. Like, we've got to be ready to have the conversation and be willing to have it. You know, it's not an easy conversation. It's not a fun one, but it's one that we have to have.
Yeah, and we don't know what the whole story is here. There could be some aspects of that could make us very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
The non-human intelligence could already be here, integrated amongst the population. I'm told that some of them look exactly like humans. And I could imagine our government saying, we don't quite know how to tell this yet. I mean, they could be here now, like in that movie, They Live.
No.
80s. Yeah, yeah. That is my best guess of what is going on, which is why we're not hearing more about it.
I would not doubt that one bit.
Come out. There are many people out there working to get the discussion going. Even Chuck Schumer, used to be my representative in New York, now senator.
Yeah.
Chuck Schumer has pushed for this Schumer rounds. And, you know, so there are a lot of different people
at
different levels who know about what we're talking about and get it. And their work doing the best they can. It's just these programs are still classified and nobody wants to go to jail over this for a long period of time. So this is what we're at. But I think it's moving in the right direction. Even a conversation like we just had right now. Thank you very much, Chris, for doing this. Oh. I think we moved the ball down the field a little bit. And that's what it's going to take.
It's what it's about, you know, and I look at my show. There are numerous shows out there that, and yes, we share people's experiences. We talk to experiencers. We talk to people's who embryos have been taken, you know, things like that. Authors, researchers, all kinds of stuff. But for me, it's more about demystifying topics than it is about hearsay and conjecture. You know, for me, it's much more about being able to clear up what you, because some of these are really like you start getting really deep into this, doctor. And this is quantum mechanics, quantum physics. This is heady stuff. Yeah. You know, you went Egon Spengler real quick. You know, and that's just it. It goes from history and folklore to quantum physics rapidly.
Right. Why not? Let's go there. I mean, it's high time.
Yeah.
It's only going to have. Yeah, it's going to be a little it's going to be disorienting for a few years or decades. You're going to feel like your sense of reality got knocked out from under you. But this is where we're going. We just need to start and get the conversation going. We'll survive this because we always have in the past.
Yep.
When scientific revolutions happened, we weren't the center of the universe and it was heliocentric. All these things happened and we're still here. We survived this and we have each other to talk to.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a little scary. I know it's going to be scary. Well, I know it's going to be scary, but we'll deal with it. It's better than being little kids in nursery school pretending it's not real.
Well, and you know, it's an idea that I discuss pretty regularly. The idea that I'm coming up on 50 years old. I remember a day where I rode my bike to the public library to look up a topic. I didn't have the internet. I had a microfiche and a card catalog and maybe the downtown Houston library if they had a book on file. You know, that they could send to my public library or that I could go reserve and go downtown and get. You know, we didn't wake up knowing in 1980 what the news was in Poughkeepsie every morning in the palm of our hand. Our society has changed. The way that we take in data has changed. The way that we filter data has changed. And we need to look at that. We need to look at that as a people, as a humanity, and as a scientific community, you know, the way, because as opposed to then where it was a decent faucet where you could control how fast it was going into the glass. Now it's like using that same glass in a torrential downpour at the end of a gutter. You know, that glass gets full real quick. The colander can't even filter the information. It just goes over the edge. So
and that's why it's going to be a black swan event, because we have spent so many years denying the reality. But you have Congress, senators are getting briefings. It seems they're being shown films of crash retrievals and extraterrestrials.
Yeah.
Our senators and Congress people are being shown this in classified briefings from the Pentagon. Before we finish up, working in Austria at a research institute the summer that East Germany ceased to exist. And I was working with East German scientists at this East-West Research Institute, EASA, Institute, International Institute for Applied Systems Analysis. I mean, within a couple of months of that summer, East Germany ceased to exist. No one predicted it. No one predicted it.
Yeah.
What happened after that? One East Bloc country after another disappeared from the map and became a free society. We consider a free society without totalitarian control. And then a year dissolved with Gorbachev and then Yeltsin. And did anyone predict that? Did anyone in our intelligence agency see that coming? No.
No.
No. You don't see these things coming. The more it's repressed, the bigger the rubber band snaps back. That's where we're at with these topics.
Yeah, well, we've got you for about another 3 minutes. What do you see happening when this bubble bursts? Because it will eventually get to a point that there's so much hot air in that bubble that it's going to pop. You know, either that or it rises to a point where the tension just doesn't hold anymore and it pops. You know.
Right. Exactly right. That's exactly what's going to happen, Chris. And I know that the powers that be want to hold this back. I don't know exactly why. Is there a terrible secret behind all of this that's too tough, they think, for people to handle? You alluded to some of it. Research abductions. Maybe that's just too much. but it's like Alvin Toffler's Future Shock, a book I read in high school in the 70s. Yep. He had Future Shock coming from technology, right? Changing faster than we could adapt. And this is my dissertation in sociology was about this idea. But it happens with information and knowledge, too. And it's going to happen with these topics. There's only so much you can try to bury your head in the sand before reality fixes things up for you. I mean, reality has a way of catching up with you like Future Shock. It's going to happen. And I never imagined getting involved from remote viewing to crop circles to UFOs.
Yeah.
Bigfoot and cryptids. But they all connected in a very neat line. I didn't expect this to happen. And the more I research all these topics, there's hundreds of thousands of witnesses, Chris. And there's more all the time. And we're sharing information through the internet and shows like this in a way we never did 10 or 20 years ago.
Yeah.
It's a different time for when there was just the Art Bell show on at night. And that was your main source for paranormal information, you know, in the 90s.
And yeah. Yeah.
That was like the main thing. But now we can do this parallel paths simultaneously on different shows every single night. And it's just, it just is going to be like the Soviet Union. It's going to collapse the existing paradigm, and it's going to be replaced by all these topics and all the experiencers and people. And I think it'll be a good thing, because there's a ton to learn here about how reality really works. And I think we'll be okay. We will figure out what reality we really live in. Who wouldn't want to know where you really live? Not the fantasy you were taught in kindergarten. Yeah.
No, exactly. And I, as you, believe that we are in for a huge, drastic change when it happens, but I hold nothing but hope for humanity and for the future of what these possibilities may bring. You know, when I hear things like, I could get worried about CERN and what they do, I guess. But when I hear news stories like CERN makes matter from light, that's just wow. And that is humanity changing.
Yeah.
You know, that's three steps away from replicator. Give me a black coffee.
This we've been held back for 70 years.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, no, that's where it's going.
No,
it's going to that world. And let's start tonight.
Because well, that's just
the older reality. It's just crumbling around us as we're doing the show. It's crumbling,
and
any politician that won't engage these subjects is going to be at a huge disadvantage.
Absolutely.
Versus those that are open to talking about this.
Yep. Yep. And, you know, much and the same thing with science, the people who are not ready to be the new Magellans and take it to what we think is the edge of the known disc that we live on and find out, nope, not a disc. I made it back. You know, we need new Magellans. We need new people who are willing to go out on that scientific limb of exploration, you know? So I'm happy that there are still good researchers like you out there doing field research. Like I'd love to get you on a better connection. But you're literally out in the field right now. Like
we'll do it again.
You found a way to get connections so that you could come on the show tonight. But you're actively out in the field doing research right now. And that's what it's about, is being able to go out there, being able to put these new paradigms to work and to the test. So thank you for that, Doctor.
I will leave us. Thank you, Chris. Thank you for your show. And I will leave it with this two words, plus ultra, which was an inscription on the Straits of Gibraltar 500 years ago. As explorers left the Mediterranean, they saw the pillars of Hercules. It said plus ultra, which means to go beyond or more beyond in Latin. I say it's time for plus ultra. Let's go beyond. They had the courage to do it 500 years ago. It's time to do it again.
That's right. Absolutely true. We need to have you on again sometime very soon, Doctor. This has been more than illuminating and more than enjoyable.
Okay, thanks for Chris.
So
I guarantee the connection will be better next time.
No worries. It was fantastic. Okay. You take care and safe travels, safe research out there in the field.
Well, thanks, Chris. Talk soon.
Absolutely. Bye-bye. Take care. while you are online checking out all of the amazing work. Whoop. Sorry, folks. While you are online checking out all of the amazing work of Dr. Simeon Hine over at MountBaldy.com, everybody, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is where you can find all of our guest books at CuriousRealm.com/store. That's also where you can get your copy of the all new Field Observation and Encounter Log. If you are a paranormal researcher, if you're out in the field like Dr. Hine doing experiments, stop on by and grab your copy of the Field Observation and Encounter Log. It's a great way for you to be able to catalog all of your research right there in your back pocket in the field as it happens. When we come back from this quick commercial break, everybody, we will be joined by our good friend, Dr. John Hall. We will be talking about targeted individuals and targeting technology, but a different kind of technology, a new kind of targeting technology, a technology that we were all exposed to a couple years ago, and how this technology may well have done hippocampal damage to our brains to allow for means of control. We will be getting into that with Dr. John Hall right after this.
Attention all Ground Zero fans. Aftermath.media is celebrating our four-year anniversary with a spectacular deal just for you. Wow! For a limited time, you can get an Aftermath premium yearly subscription for only $79. That's right. Just $79 for a full year of exclusive content, ad-free listening, and premium features. Dive into a world of incredible stories, top-tier journalism, and the best in entertainment. Whether you're a longtime listener or new to Ground Zero, this is the perfect time to join the Aftermath family. Don't miss out on this amazing anniversary special. Visit aftermath.media today and sign up for your Aftermath premium yearly subscription at just $79. But hurry, this offer won't last long. Celebrate with us and elevate your media experience to the next level. Aftermath.media, the ultimate resource for parapolitical and paranormal fans. Visit aftermath.media and subscribe today. That's aftermath.media.
The key to good science is good research. At the heart of good research is a good data set. With the Field Observation and Encounter Log from Curious Research, you can easily keep track of your investigative information all in one place, making it easier to review cases and readily see comparisons and contrasts between them. Whether out in the woods squatching, in a back room gathering EVPs, or using high-tech gear to track UFO UAP activity, this easy-to-carry, pocket-sized scientific data log is the perfect companion for any field researcher. You can find your copy of the Curious Research Field Observation and Encounter Log at Amazon.com or visit the official Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to reserve your copy for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is CuriousRealm.com/store. Hello, everybody, and thank you so much for staying around through that quick commercial break. And also, thank you so much to our sponsors, especially WebWorks Wireless. They're your source for high-speed internet for all. WebWorksWireless.com, everybody. No data limits, no throttling, no credit checks, no contracts. I have been using WebWorks Wireless since the beginning of Curious Realm. They are who we live stream our website feed through. And all across the country using their wireless router, I have gotten nothing but amazing connection. We have never had a drop, never had an issue during live streams to our website. So stop on by and check them out, everybody. WebWorksWireless.com is the website that you want to use. Our guest in this segment, our good friend, Dr. John Hall, author of Guinea Pigs, Technologies of Control, as well as satellite weapons, a new breed, here to talk about one of our passion topics here on the show, targeted individuals and targeting technology. Welcome back, Dr. John Hall. How are you doing, buddy?
Good, Chris. How are you doing?
Doing okay, man. I have been busy. You've been out speaking. It's nice to see you actively out speaking again and doing speaking engagements and getting word out about these things, because I think it is one of the most important topics out there, whether people are a targeted individual or not, doctor. It's the idea of knowing that the technology exists and knowing that it's out there for good. It's out there for nefarious purpose. You know, like I myself make binaural beats. You could very well make binaural beats for all kinds of horrible purposes if you wanted to, you know? But yeah, I think it's important that people understand that this technology is real and exists.
Well, you know, and that's kind of, I mean, your show has been influential on that. And certainly, for those that don't know, Chris does create binaural beats, for me for some of the targeted individuals that reach out. And there's a kind of a systematic, you know, way that, we combine bone conduction technology with binaural beats that kind of helps defeat the programs that are being directed, at them. But, you're right. I mean, as far as, I am kind of back out doing a little bit of touring. I've actually got a speaking engagement coming up in September called Mind Nexus. It's September 27th through 29th in Tucson, Arizona, that I'll be there live. For, you know, some of my followers and stuff know that I had a daughter 3 years ago. She's just turned three. So that's kind of occupied a lot of my time, and having to just probably be a little bit safer about, you know, some of the outreach that I do now than I was before. But it's come a long way just in the time that I've known you and the speaking engagements and the shows that we've done together. 10, 15 years ago, when, you know, I first started writing about this, it was a topic that truly nobody had heard of. When you talked about, you know, people hearing voices in their head that are truly being directed to them, and it's a form of communication, not mental illness, and the targeting with directed energy type weapons and the stalking, it was new. And when you talked about that, I mean, you were, you know, almost always, you know, kind of pegged as crazy, and, you know, the tinfoil hat comments that people would make. But it's kind of come full circle. And now that it, you know, it is one of the most probably common crimes described on the internet. And it's gone full circle from people saying, man, that just sounds like craziness, I've never heard of that, to even people who don't necessarily believe it and haven't experienced it themselves will admit, you know, all of a sudden now you're talking to people and going, you know what, I've got a cousin, you know, I've got a daughter, I've got a son, or, you know, my wife thinks that's happening to her, or we know somebody, there's a guy on our block that's happening to. I mean, almost every family has someone involved in the family, directly or indirectly, that has experienced some form of this targeting, you know, whether it's the gang stalking, or whether it's the, you know, the pain from directed energy weaponry, or it's the voice to skull technology. But it's really, I'm not taking, certainly not trying to take all the credit, because there's a lot of other people talking about it. But, you know, at least we've done our job as far as exposing it enough, which I remember early on talking it with interviews with you, saying, you know, I don't care if people necessarily believe anything I've got to say, but I want them to hear it, because eventually it's going to come back to haunt them. And that way, when one of their loved ones says, I think there's cameras in the house, I'm hearing somebody telling me what I'm wearing and describing, you know, exactly what I'm thinking or what I'm wearing or what I'm about to wear. At least that person will go, you know what? There was a guy on Dudes and Beer. There was a guy on Curious Realm that was talking about this exact same thing. You know, and I've said all along, that was the main impetus for these books. You know, so that way, it's not the family members of the person that's it happening to doesn't immediately say, you need a psychiatrist, because that psychiatrist 99.5% of the time is going to victimize that person a second time.
Yeah, and quite literally unintentionally victimized them a second time. It's kind of a horrifying cycle, you know, the concept of just a victim denial to begin with, which is a thing. It's out there, you know, even the idea of the majority of molestations, rapes, things like that go unaccounted for and unstaticized because nobody reports them. Because they think nobody will believe them. And sadly enough, that kind of victim mindset is all too common. And also one of the things that leads into this to begin with, is the idea that from a distance, somebody can not only read your thoughts, read your intentions, but actively be able to influence them as well. And I'm popping up an article right now from New York Post. Is this the future? Wild new tech can read someone's mind with shocking accuracy. And last time we had you on, we talked about the MIT study that was just done where using regular, you know, MRIs and other techniques, they were able to have people listen to a Pink Floyd song, then come back a week later and record them thinking about it and reassemble the song.
And if you remember 10 years ago, out in California, there was a group, and these aren't government groups, you know, these are private groups, civilian groups, that they actually were able to use functional MRI and decode the temporal and parietal areas of the brain, the visual centers, and have somebody watch film footage and then think about that film footage later and decode it from the brain back into a visual film image. And, and if you remember one of the ones that went around for a long time, they had a guy watched a plane land and then they decoded it, put it back into a visual, code, I guess. And then could replay it directly from the guy's thoughts onto a screen for other people to see. So, I mean, and this was probably more than a decade ago now. And that was using, you know, civilian technology that's nowhere near what the government has. So.
Yeah. And, you know, scientists in Japan have found a way to visually image your dreams to actively show them on screen. There's all kinds of interesting things. I mean, here's the idea right here of them being able to pull images straight out of your dreams. Scientists can pluck images out of your dreams from popular science. This is 2013, that this technology came about. And when you look at especially things like the biosignal sensing device using dynamic selection of electrodes. This sounds really out there, you know, but a wearable electronic device includes a housing and electrode carrier attached to the housing and